Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Oh,
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Man.
I don't like the hood. What you say, Fred?
I say we better
take it on the lamb out here.
Yeah. You better watch the man.
But come over here, brother, let me tell you something.
You think we're talking too loud?
Hush that butt.
I ain't got no dust.
I don't have to take it on the land.
Watch that
Huh?
Watch that man.
Watch that. Yeah, all right. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Coming from some funny places. What'd you say, bro?
What's happening? Wow.
Trying to get down. Well, you know, look at him. We can't have that.
That's right. That old. Yeah.
Ain't no alcohol. Man, I don't dig it. What you say, Jeton?
Hey, don't be so mean.
You know I'm clean now. Yeah.
And on the sea.
Excuse me, cat, while I rap.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
And during the few moments that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
The cost of personality. I know your anger. I know your dreams. I've been everything you wanna be. Oh, I'm the cost of personality. Like Mussolini and Kennedy. I'm the cost of personality. The cost of personality, the cost of personality. We'll be right back.
told you a little while ago, these leaders that they called leaders, this included Lena Horne, this included Dick Gregory, and this included comedians, comics, trumpet players, baseball players. Show me in the white community where a comedian is a white leader. Show me in the white community where a singer is a white leader, or a dancer or a trumpet player is a white leader. These aren't leaders. These are puppets and clowns that have been set up over the white community and or over the black community by the white community and have been made celebrities and usually say exactly what they know that the white man wants to hear. And it is an honor, actually, that they endorsed Dr. Martin Luther King and were against the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. That's actually an honor. Now, when you say that they also, in the same Newsweek poll magazine, I think the pollster said that he went into the Negro community and asked about the Muslims. And many Negroes whom he asked said, well, I never heard of the Muslims. Who are they? You know,
this is the rank and file we're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Now, when they got down to the rank and file, this was the answers that they got. This is the equivalent to the situation in Kenya during the Mau Mau uprising when many frightened whites in Kenya, Africa, would go among the Africans and ask them, what about the Mau Mau? And the African would say, I never heard of them. And the same white man who would ask the African this question and very naively believe what the African said, when he went to bed that night, he would lose his head. And usually the one who took his head was the same African who told him that afternoon he had never heard of the Mau Mau.
Except in the Newsweek poll, they used Negro interviewers.
You'll find that oft times Negroes are as much on guard around Negro interviewers who usually represent the bourgeois element of Negroes as they are on guard around whites. Usually Negroes know that when this bourgeois Negro walks through the door, he is not doing something that he's initiated himself, but he's involved in something in which the white man is the absolute author of and has sent him to the Negro community for some information. And when they give that Negro some information, usually they give him the information that they want the white want him to take back to the white man, because that's who he's going to take it back to.
Got the cat. that's him right there. In that G35, man.
Wearing a retro?
That shit is tight.
$430, it better be.
Hell yeah. I'm going to get me one of those motherfuckers.
You must going to get that Muxy Bose then. Little mini-me ass going to be swimming in that sale.
As usual, man, y'all fools are missing my point. That boy came up short on that money last week, and y'all see he out here grinding. So where that money at?
You need to look beyond what he driving and wearing on his back. That boy got a girlfriend?
He went with this little freak up at the high school.
She wearing ice?
She wearing an onion. That's about all I can remember.
Hell yeah.
Yo, check out the girl. High school girl with platinum around her neck. Only one place it came from.
Give my man this thing. Sig Sauer. That ain't no Larkin, dog.
Used to revolvers, man. 38 don't jam.
Don't hold 15 neither.
Game done changed.
Game the same. Just got more fizz.
How'd it go?
We got one out of two of the motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Yo, B.I., man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday, you know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you going to do?
But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
B, he was a man in his time, you know?
He a man today. He a man.
Okay, today we got a short topic, unless you guys want to talk about something else. Mobile home communities versus trailer parks. What is the distinction between a mobile home community and a trailer park? I actually thought they were one and the same. I thought a trailer park was a slang expression for a mobile home community. But they're different. So if you guys know the difference between the two, 619-768-2945. Once again, call in 619-768-2945. If you know the difference between a trailer park and a mobile home community.
One, two, one, two, three, four. We'll be right back.
walking around with their heads in the sky. City's aflame in the summertime. Control the sound of soul, shooting rockets to the moon, kids going up to soon. Politicians say more taxes will solve everything.
And the band played on.
And agencies to keep it going. Fire, water and power, education, health. There's a department of airports, a harbor department, and libraries. There's also a department for law and order. This is Parker Center. I work here. I carry a badge. It was Monday, June 29th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide. The boss is Captain Brown. My partner's Bill Gannon. My name's Friday. Mrs. Lily Burnham, a real estate broker, had been reported missing. The preliminary investigation indicated a strong possibility of foul play.
The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Bill and I drove over to the offices of the Burnham Realty Company, 9:05 a.m. Police officers, this is Bill Gannon. My name's Friday.
I'll tell Mr. Richmond you're here.
Thank you.
I'll just be a moment.
Oh, take a look at this, Joe. Beautiful home, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can tell quality construction. 3+10, 2 baths, built-ins. What do you figure the asking is?
The what?
The asking price. How much for this one?
Well, I wouldn't have any idea.
Got to be 42.5. Probably take 39.7 today's market.
Is that right?
You bet. I know the market pretty good.
You do, huh?
Every Sunday we go for a drive. Eileen will watch for open houses, you know, furnished models.
Yeah.
We stop and go through them, spend the whole afternoon. We've seen some great buys, Joe.
Well, I didn't know you were interested in a new house.
What makes you say that?
Well, I mean, you're out looking at all those great buys.
Well, you've been out to my place.
That's right.
What's wrong with the house I've got?
Sergeant Friday, this is Mr. Richmond, one of our salesmen.
Sergeant.
My partner, Officer Bill Gannon.
Well, you gentlemen aren't here to buy a house, so I better let you do the talking.
Wonder if we could have your name, miss.
That's right, Miss Walters. Ida Walters.
And you filed a missing report, did you?
Well, yes, sir. I'm Mrs. Burnham's secretary.
Ida phoned him in, Sergeant, on my say-so.
How long has she been missing?
From our happy little circle since Friday afternoon. Went out to show some property about 2 o'clock.
2:15, I saw her drive away.
Did you? Well, then, Ida must have been the last one to see her.
She didn't even phone in again.
Was that unusual?
Yes, sir.
The weekend, gentlemen. That's when we move houses. A man and wife, generally, they can't get out together during the week, so we spend Saturdays and Sundays sitting in a furnished model, wheeling and dealing. You know.
Yes, sir.
Now, you take Miss Lily. She's a businesswoman. Nothing would keep her from a weekend of wheeling and dealing.
Something did.
Yeah, that's why we reported it.
Maybe she's sick.
I called her apartment house. Somebody looked in.
Yes, ma'am.
But they don't think she's been there all weekend.
She might have gone out of town. Has that ever happened before?
Not on a weekend.
Does she have relatives?
There's a sister, I think, in Philadelphia. Nobody out here.
Well, there must have been a husband at one time. What about him?
He's never mentioned.
All right. Does she have a boyfriend?
There's Terry Williams, but it looks like he doesn't know anything either.
Mr. Williams has been calling us 2 or 3 times on Friday and again this morning.
I see. Well, maybe there's somebody else.
Wouldn't matter, Sergeant.
Well, how's that?
She had an appointment this morning to close the deal. No man would ever stand between Lily and the commission, or a woman either.
Maybe that's the secret of her success.
You have to understand, gentlemen, Ida is the president of the Miss Lily fan club. I work here just for money. It gives us different perspectives.
Do you need me for anything else?
We'll need a description of Mrs. Burnham.
Well, she's attractive, I guess, if you lack them cold and ruthless. Age, what would you say, Ida?
About 36.
Yeah, 36 going on 42. But she's kept her figure and knows how to dress.
You remember what she was wearing Friday?
Your department, Ida.
It was her paisley linen dress. Over it, she wore a matching linen coat.
What color?
The dress was orange and yellow, and the coat was yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And bone leather shoes with a matching purse. It's very smart.
Yes, ma'am. Anything else?
No, except we're all terribly worried. It's just not like Mrs. Burnham. She must have had an accident or something.
Something has kept her away, but knowing our Lily...
Yeah.
I doubt it was an accident.
Before leaving the realty office, we learned that Terry Williams, the missing woman's boyfriend, was the day bartender at a bar on West Adams. We also obtained the make, model, and license number of Mrs. Burnham's car. 10:50 a.m., we went back to the office, and after checking R&I, we put out a teletype describing the vehicle with a request that, if observed, to notify Homicide Division. 11:05 a.m., we drove over to West Adams to interview Terry Williams, Mrs. Burnham's boyfriend.
Good morning.
Terry Williams.
That's right.
Police officers.
Mm-hmm. It's about Lily Burnham, isn't it?
That's right.
Only thing it could be. The secretary said they were going to report it if she didn't show up soon. Guess she hasn't, huh?
When did you see her last?
Thursday night. We had dinner, a couple of drinks. Broke it up early.
See her over the weekend?
No, sir.
You didn't make a date with her?
Nothing definite. Said I'd call. Maybe we'd get together.
Did you call?
A few times. Got no answer.
How long have you known Mrs. Burnham?
Guess it must be close to a year now.
She got any other boyfriends that you know of?
Don't see how she could. We were together most of the time.
But not over the weekend?
That's right. Because she wasn't in when I called. I explained all that.
Would you happen to have a photograph of her?
No, sir.
Use the phone.
Do you know if Mrs. Burnham carried a lot of cash?
She was never short, but not enough to go very far. That's what you're thinking.
That's not what I'm thinking.
Robbery? How much do you need to get mugged these days?
Not very much.
Excuse me. Got a customer down here.
Nothing on Williams. Local boy. Clean all the way through high school.
Yeah.
Mrs. Burnham's car turned up. They want it moved before tonight. They need the space.
Who's that?
Car's in a restaurant parking lot.
A.M. According to the parking lot attendant, the car had been discovered on the lot Saturday morning. It was first assumed the owner, deciding he was incapable of driving, had gone home in a cab and would return for it the next day. When it was still there 48 hours later, it was reported abandoned.
Book of real estate listings.
Keys are in the ignition.
Gas receipt, Mrs. Lily Burnham, 17 gallons.
Tank's almost full. Where'd she buy the gas?
Station out near Hanson Dam.
12 noon. Before leaving the lot, we arranged to have Mrs. Burnham's car gone over by SID. An examination of the loose leaf book revealed 8 listings in the Hanson Dam area. 12:20 p.m., we interviewed the attendant at Jackson & Martin Super Service. After hearing a description of Mrs. Burnham in her car, he thought he remembered her from last Friday. He was almost certain there had been a man in the car with her, but he was unable to give us any description of him. We got a copy of the recent listings from the Burnham Realty Company. We also picked up a set of keys for the houses. 12:35 p.m., we started checking the various listings. The occupants of the houses told us Mrs. Burnham had not been there at any time in the past month. 12:48 p.m., the third house we checked was vacant and still for sale.
What was that number, 1223?
That's right.
Yeah, here we are. Cigarette butts, lipstick on them. Could have been here a long time.
Yeah, I'll check the rest of the place.
Bill. Orange and yellow linen dress, bone shoes, matching handbag.
Yep.
Mrs. Lily Burnham.
p.m. In answer to our request, a field supervisor and 2 radio units arrived at the scene. One unit was stationed at the end of the street to keep out curious onlookers. The other was sent to cruise the area in the hopes of locating witnesses. Men from SID were also dispatched. The room was dusted for fingerprints. Photographs, both in black and white and color, were taken of the victim.
You want to take a look at this now? Outside was wiped clean. $50 in bills.
Inside's pretty neat, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't look like anybody prowled it. Usual stuff in it. Compact lipstick, nail file, comb.
Yeah. Better take these beads along. They're broken.
I was just thinking.
Yeah?
This purse, the stuff in it. Not like my wife's.
What do you mean?
You know what's missing? Credit cards.
Well, we know she had a gas card.
Not anymore, she doesn't.
p.m. The radio unit, which had been cruising the area, had located a possible witness. Frank Stobie, a local handyman, told us that while riding past the house on his bicycle at roughly 2:30 p.m. the previous Friday, he had seen a man and a woman approaching the front entrance. He described the victim's clothing with reasonable accuracy, but he could not recall any details about the man. 5:20 p.m. Bill and I decided to re-interview the victim's boyfriend, Terry Williams. At the Red Quill Bar, we were told that he had already left for the day. We got his home address.
Okay, what is it? What do you want this time?
We want to talk to you again.
Did you find Lily?
We'd like you to come downtown with us, Williams.
So she's dead.
What makes you say that?
It's true, isn't it?
You got a coat?
Are you guys arresting me?
No, we just want to get some more information.
Okay. Let me wash my face.
All right.
Joe? Take a look.
I can just get a clean shirt out of here.
You look fine.
Then you're not taking me in.
Now listen carefully. You have the right to remain silent. Any statements you make can and will be used against you in a court of law. Do you understand that?
Then you are arresting me.
You have the right to the presence of an attorney. If you cannot afford one, one will be appointed without charge before any questioning.
Do you understand that?
Yeah, I understand. I just want to know why.
Well, that makes us even.
Hmm?
We just want to know why you've got those four beads.
Oh, I can explain those.
Suppose you do that.
Thursday night. I told you about it. It was my birthday. Lily took me to dinner. Afterwards, we came over here for a little while.
Go on.
She broke her beads. Or maybe I did. One way or the other, the string got busted. I fixed it for her and thought all the beads were on it. But when I sacked out for the night, those four turned up.
Where did they turn up?
On the couch. Except one I found in the cuff of my slacks. Now, that's the truth.
Maybe. But you didn't tell us all that this morning.
I didn't think it was important then.
Why do you think it is now?
p.m. Terry Williams was booked for murder. Under interrogation, he made several conflicting statements. He admitted that last Thursday was not his birthday and that Lily Burnham had been in the habit of picking up all their tabs. He also admitted they had quarreled that night, but he continued to deny having seen her after she left his apartment around midnight. He could not satisfactorily account for his whereabouts at the approximate time of the murder. 8.05 p.m., the suspect agreed to undergo a polygraph examination. It was conducted by Lieutenant W.L. Klingon. 11.30 p.m., we were given the results of the examination.
First, Lovely say there were strong patterns indicating deception. For instance, a good reading on the money in the victim's billfold.
He knew how much?
On the nose. It's possible she always carried exactly $50. Some people limit themselves to a certain amount.
Yeah.
Also, a good response on the clothes she was wearing, the string of beads getting broken in a quarrel, and the general location of the crime.
What location?
Handsome Dam area. I'll return to that in a minute. I got a positive reading on the victim's death by strangulation. Now, let me ask you a question, Joe, Bill. Where was she killed?
What do you mean, Lieutenant?
Could she have been murdered somewhere else and her body moved into the house?
No, we didn't find any evidence to suggest that. None at all.
Specifically in the victim's car, parked somewhere in an alley.
You got that reaction from Williams?
Very strongly, and it was dark, rather late at night.
We've got a good witness placing the victim at the house about 2:30 Friday afternoon.
We think she was strangled shortly after. Coroner might confirm the time, Joe.
Yeah, we'll know after the post tomorrow.
All right, let's get back to this reaction on Hanson Dam. Could he have known she was going out there?
Well, the victim might have mentioned it the night before.
Well, I have to tell you, I got no indication at all that he knows the location of the house, or that he took her car, or that he knew where the car was found abandoned.
He just doesn't know the right things, does he?
And yet he reacted to her being dead by strangulation.
That's true, but a woman being strangled in a car parked in an alley is a fairly common scene in mystery novels or on TV. Or he could have been reacting to the way he would have done it.
You mean he might have just played back to you something he'd read?
Or saw in the movie, say, in the last 24 hours. And didn't they quarrel Thursday night in his apartment?
Yeah, according to him.
Well, she got loud and disturbed the other tenants. Well, Williams may have wished he could quiet her down.
I see. Well, what's your best opinion, Lee?
Looks to me like you've got some work to do.
Yeah, how's that?
I don't think he's a good suspect.
Tuesday, June 30th, we attended the postmortem on Lily Burnham. The coroner confirmed that death was due to manual strangulation. He fixed the time of death somewhere between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. the previous Friday. There was no evidence of sexual assault. On the basis of this information, Terry Williams was cleared and released. 11:30 a.m., Bill and I went back to the office. Bill contacted the real estate secretary, Ida Walters, and asked if she would check Lily Burnham's charge accounts. Miss Walters agreed and said she'd let us know. Friday, July 3rd, in response to a message from Ida Walters, we drove over to the Burnham Realty Company, 2:20 p.m.
I'm sorry I took so long.
That's all right, Miss Walters.
I knew Mrs. Burnham had many charge accounts, but nobody can find any cards or charger plates or anything, unless you found them with her.
No, ma'am, we don't have them.
Well, the only thing I could do was go through the files and look for old receipts and then verify that these accounts were still active.
Yeah.
It was the least I could do for... Anyway, it took time.
What did you find?
Two service station cards, diners club, carte blanche, an air travel card, just about all the major department stores, and Bank AmeriCard. I made this list.
Thank you.
Sergeant, is it true what the papers say that Mrs. Burnham was... It happened last Friday afternoon?
Yes, ma'am. It's been verified.
Then I'm right.
How do you mean?
This statement just came in today from Barton's Wilshire.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, It shows that Mrs. Burnham bought a diamond wristwatch for over $400. At first, I thought the store had made a mistake.
But you called the store, did you?
Yes, sir. They said there was no mistake. They were very positive. I knew then that there was something wrong. I mean, it just isn't possible. Mrs. Burnham couldn't put a charge on her account the day after she was... Excuse me.
All right, whoever it was stole her credit cards. Figured that way he'd buy a lot of stuff that he could sell off later. He'd need a woman to use those cards.
That's right.
Made an appointment with Mrs. Burnham to look at a house. Got her alone.
Yeah.
Then he killed her.
...4 p.m., a description of the suspect's M.O. was circulated to all police departments. A different version of this bulletin was sent to a real estate trade journal for publication. Tuesday, July 7th, a response to our bulletin came in from Phoenix, Arizona.
Man identified as Carl Keegan, alias William Simpson, victimized 9 women in Phoenix. Same M.O., stole credit cards.
Yeah, what about the description?
Good one. This Keegan's wanted on a fugitive warrant.
Yeah.
He jumped bail down there.
1 week passed, Tuesday, July 14th. We got a call from Sergeant Jack Williams, Robbery Division. He said he thought he might have something for us. Bill and I went down to the robbery squad room to see him.
Friday, Gannon.
Jack, how's it going?
Jack, I'm playing. Got a bank series going that's keeping us on the run.
Is that right?
A couple of on-ramp specialists. They're really hitting pretty good.
He said you might have something for us.
Yeah, on that realty thing you guys are working.
What do you got?
Just got back in from talking to this woman. Lady realtor down near Inglewood. Name's Roy, Ardith Roy.
Yeah, what about her?
Says about 4 days ago, she was out showing a house to a prospective buyer. Said the guy appeared interested in the house and told her he'd check back with her about making a deal in a few days.
Yeah.
Roy woman said she wrote it off as a no sale. The guy left her at the empty house. She locked up and started back for her office. On the way back, she stopped for a tank of gas. When she went to give the attendant her credit card, she noticed it was gone. Not only her gas card, but all of her cards.
Now, the man she was showing the house to, did he give a name?
Yeah, Simpson. William Simpson.
She gave you a description?
Yeah. It's all down here. There's more.
Go ahead.
Well, she figured until today, maybe she just lost the cards or misplaced them. She finished checking her morning mail. That's why she called in.
Yeah.
She got a bill from Mallard, you know, the sporting goods store?
Yeah.
Well, the bill was for $780. Most she ever bought there was a catcher's mitt for her son's birthday.
Did you check the store?
Yeah. Clerk remembers a rather nice-looking girl who charged the stuff. He asked for identification. The girl showed him all the other credit cards, so naturally, he didn't question the purchase. Big store. Doubtful if anybody would know the Roy woman on site.
That it?
Well, that's it. Whoever you're looking for, sorry I can't serve him up on a plate, but it ties, doesn't it?
Sure sounds like it, Jack. Now, this realtor, she say anything about the man's behavior?
She said he appeared courteous, looked the house over carefully, appeared straight enough to her.
How'd this Simpson get to her purse, she say?
Told her she left it on the kitchen sink. The two of them wandered through the house. When they got to one of the back bedrooms, the guy said he'd like to take one more look at the kitchen. She stayed in the bedroom. He went to the kitchen by himself.
Thanks, Jack.
Got anything going for you?
We put a notice in the real estate trade journal. About all we can do is wait and hope it brings rain.
And in the meantime, there are a lot of empty houses to show.
And a lot of credit cards to steal.
Wednesday, July 22nd, 10:45 a.m. We got our first break.
Woman realtor out of McCoyma just phoned in. Name's Esther Jenkins. Saw her notice in the trade journal. Says she's got a date to show a house in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Description fits Keegan.
11:15 a.m. We arrived at the address given us by the realtor who had telephoned in. Mrs. Esther Jenkins.
I think you'll really enjoy this home. It seems to have everything you're looking for.
Yes, I believe this is just what I want.
Hello. Would you gentlemen like to see the house?
Police officers.
Stand still.
You're Esther Jenkins?
That's right.
Just a moment. I don't think you have a right to do this.
We have a right to look at your identification.
And I'm entitled to know why.
You've been the route. There's a fugitive want on you. You jumped bail in Arizona. Let's have your name.
William Simpson.
Miss Jenkins, are you carrying any credit cards?
Yes, I am.
Would you mind showing them to us?
No, not at all. I always carry them with me. That's strange. I had them just a few minutes ago.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm positive. I always carry them with me.
I hope you're not accusing me of taking them.
Well, now, maybe your name's Esther Jenkins. That's what it says on these credit cards.
You can't do a thing until I talk to my attorney.
Ms. Jenkins?
Yes? Those are mine, all right.
All right, put your hands behind your back.
Just a minute. Who do you think you're pushing around?
We're not pushing you around, but since you don't seem to know, I'll tell you what your name is. It's Carl Keegan. You killed a realtor by the name of Lily Burnham, just like you would have this woman if she'd found out you stole these cards.
You can't prove any of that.
Well, we're going to try.
You made a mistake, and I'm not going to pay for it.
You're going to use a credit card?
Just seen is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On September 20th, trial was held in Department 185, Superior Court of the State of California for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. The suspect was found guilty of murder in the first degree. Murder in the first degree is punishable by death or confinement in the state prison for life, at the discretion of the court or jury trying the same. Subsequent investigation led to the identification and arrest of Carl Keegan's female accomplice, who was tried and found guilty on 5 counts of forgery. Forgery is punishable by imprisonment in the state prison for not less than 1 year, nor more than 14 years, or by imprisonment in the county jail for not more than 1 year.
Today, we got just a short question. And do you know the distinction or the difference between a mobile home community? Okay, we got through that. The difference between a mobile home community and a trailer park, I thought they were one and the same. But they're not. So we'll be back in 3 minutes to tell you what that is. And then it's open mics or anything you guys want to talk about.
You give me that funny feeling in my tummy.
Yeah, that's right. She breaks the mold of what we think of as what girls are interested in versus what guys are interested in. She's an individual.
Welding, grinding, cutting, sanding. I'd much rather wear grease than makeup.
Her mind just works like an engineer. She wants to know why.
The project kind of took on a life of its own. Now there's literally thousands of people watching to see what she succeeds at next.
My name is Catherine DeMaria. I'm 14 years old, and I'm rebuilding a Pontiac Fiero.
All right, what are you working on today?
We're going to do welding first.
Welding first. Okay.
My car that I'm building is a Fiero 86 GT. It's going to be all black and yellow interior. And then the body's going to be gloss black with yellow racing stripes. My car is going to be fast and sporty.
Okay. Today's, I'm going to give it out. Question. Mobile home communities versus trailer parks. What's the? Three hours ago, I didn't know. I thought they were one and the same. Mobile home community and a trailer park. I thought they were one and the same. But matter of fact, I thought trailer park was a derogatory name for mobile home community. But there's a clear distinction between the two. So let me put it out there for those of you who didn't know, because for years I thought they were one and the same. A mobile home community is where mobile homes, now let me give you the visual on a mobile home, an RV, recreational vehicle, something that actually is mobile, has wheels, and we're talking about functional wheels with axle on it and all that, that you can drive around. Okay, RVs, again, fifth wheels, there's something that has a motor in it. Those are mobile homes. And just like a clear example would be an RV. So a mobile home community, go to a place that where you see practically nothing but RV, recreational vehicles, vehicles that move, vehicles that have four wheels, vehicles that have a motor, and they can drive in the place, they can drive out of the place at a moment's notice. That's what a mobile home community is. And you have nomads, motorized nomads that drive these things. All right. Now, a trailer park is different. A trailer park is not mobile. Okay. They typically, a trailer, you know, they bring a trailer into a particular park, and none of the homes, which are actually trailers, none of those homes are mobile. None of these homes have a motor. None of these homes ever had a motor. All right, that's what a trailer park is. It's not nothing negative. It's just, it's a clear distinction. Mobile home communities have mobile, they're vehicles. They're vehicles that have a motor, an operational motor. They can move at a moment's notice. And, you know, they might be in a park where they have hookups for, you know, dumping and sewage and that, you know, that type of thing. Water, fresh water. But that you know, a RV park, that is a mobile home community. And a trailer park is a place where the homes are trailers. They have no motor in them. They cannot move on their own. No locomotion. Okay. That's the difference between the two. Typically, RVs cost more. It requires more upkeep because, you know, you got maintenance, you know, brakes, gasoline, or whatever they run on, you know, whatever, diesel, I guess gas. Either diesel or petrol. But clear distinction between those two. Let's see. And we're going to bring some people in here that they buy and sell trailers, but for some reason they've been classified as mobile homes. So a lot of people interchange those two. There's a clear distinction. So we're going to bring some people on that deal in trailers. Anyway, but it's probably a whole, you know, affordable housing trends, you know, that type thing. And we're going to go to the phone lines here momentarily.
So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride. Be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride. Damn right. So you wanna be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride. Your wheels ain't fly. You gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride. Damn right. So you wanna be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride. Be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride. Damn right.
It's May 8th, 2015 on Friday. The time is 10:25 p.m. And up next from Amanda Froelich. This is dated April 12, 2015. This man in this photograph built a low-cost tiny home for only $500. Oh, that is fantastic, don't you think? Look at that house. $500, everybody. Amazing. Tiny homes are all the rage nowadays, and why not? Who actually needs 1,000 square feet per person when most individuals spend at least 8 to 10 hours away from their abode just to be able to pay for it? It's a realization a lot of people around the world are waking up to, and for this reason, many individuals and families are seeking to simplify so they can spend more time enjoying just being alive. But to build a tiny home isn't as affordable as it might seem. While there are do-it-yourself options, many tiny homes on the market are luxurious, high-end living spaces, which come with a hefty price tag. Using salvaged materials and gifted items, however, can definitely keep the production of a tiny home economical. And Pacific Northwestern resident Scott Brooks has proven just this by building a tiny home for well under $500. That's still unbelievable. United States dollars, of course. And here's another photo. Now, that is a very cute place. I'd like to see the inside, wouldn't you? This is credited to Scott Brooks, by the way, the photographs. As showcased on GizMag, Brooks' home is quite small for a tiny home. It measures only 83 square feet and sits on a 20-acre plot of land. Wow! Owned by his friend in Washington. After Brooks spent 2 years journeying around Africa, Thailand, India, Nepal, Montana, and Alaska, he moved back home to settle a bit and help his friend start an organic farm. He then constructed the house to serve as his new sanctuary and dubbed it the Transforming Tiny Home, building the interior while his friend designed the structure. Cool. 20 acres of land. Wow, must be nice. And there's the tiny home on the inside. Boy, that's tiny. Where does he cook? Probably outside, I would imagine. Brooks' tiny home isn't fancy by any means, with no plumbing, no refrigerator, and no cladding. Yet his no-frills lifestyle is evident in the structure he calls home at present. But there are many neat compromises his quiet existence boasts. Brooks is connected to the main grid, can heat his home with a wood stove that was gifted to him, and can clean up using a nearby outdoor shower and outhouse. Cool. Let's take a look. And there's his bed. He's got a place to sleep, looks like. And looks like he's got something else under the bed there. Very compact, I must add. Extremely compact. Credited to Scott Brooks again. And there's his wood stove. Cool wood stove. The basics are there, and the interior is efficient and compact with a sitting area, fold-down bed, a wall full of hooks, and storage shelving. Plus, Brooks has a generous work surface that doubles as a kitchen, thanks to an awesome ninja-style hood that hides a portable propane cooktop. Oh, there it is, right there. Isn't that something, folks? Yeah, that is ingenious, isn't it? And look at his storage for his pots and pans, right there. And his shoes. Look at the shoes on the right-hand side there. The compact home has a lot of natural daylighting thanks to a recycled skylight window and a large front window. Oh, look at that workspace in that tiny house. Isn't that cool? And a big picture window. Nice. As Brooks has proven in his earlier adventures, he doesn't need much to be happy. He has a beautiful outdoors, a front yard, and a safe, cozy space that he's proud of, hand-built with hard work and made possible through friendship. This home that costs less than $500 is certainly something to boast about, in our opinion. And there's his storage for his food right there. Very efficient. Look at that. He makes use of every single part of this tiny little house. That is so cool. Okay, and you can check out more and visit Scott Brooks' blog right by clicking right there. And more images from Giz Magazine. Let me check that out and see if we have any more photos of his tiny house. Just a moment. Okay, everybody. I clicked on that link and I didn't see any newer photos of his tiny house. So I would presume that that's it for the photographs, but that pretty much gives you a good idea of what it looks like. But let's take a look at the house from the outside again. I can't get over that stove, that hidden stove area. That's really cool. I like that quite a bit. And the price of building this thing is amazing. You know? It's very, very affordable if you had a piece of land. Think of what you could do. Yep. That's going to do it for this report.
Hey, guys. Nope. Hey guys, welcome back to my channel. In today's video, I'm going to be talking about how much money I make on YouTube. I figured I'll do this video. I did a similar video, but it was a long time ago. But it's definitely changed since then. I'm going to kind of talk about that. I'm doing this video not because I want to brag, not because I want to do anything. It's honestly, and of course there's an ambulance. Also, do not mind my face, okay? I just did a hydrating mask, like, you know, one of those hydrating sheet masks. Oh my gosh. Do it like every couple of days. That's why, do you hear people beeping? Oh my word. I'm doing this video because this is like the most asked question, one of the most asked, I always say the most asked question, but it really is the most asked question I get, or one of them, especially with strangers. I'm always taking cabs. I'm always in Ubers or Lyfts. I'm always traveling by myself or just in life, and everybody wants to know, what do you do for a living? How the heck do you make money? How do you support yourself? And then when I tell them I'm a YouTuber, especially people of a certain age, like people that aren't millennials, that are older, I can see that they don't really understand how maybe we make money on the internet. I get a ton of those questions. This video, I'm just going to be talking about how much money I make, how I make money, and if in case one of you guys wants to try your hand at YouTube or Instagram or, you know, working for yourself, I think it's a great, I love my job. It's not an end goal for me. I don't want to be a YouTuber for the rest of my life, but it's a great stepping stone. It's amazing. I love my job so much, and the amazing thing about being a YouTuber or Instagrammer is it opens so many doors. The world is being ran right now by the internet. So I'm going to talk about how I make money. I'm going to talk about sponsorships. I'm going to talk how much money I make month by month. And then I'm going to talk about some things maybe people don't know. So let's get straight into the video. Make sure you guys follow me on Instagram at Mary Jane Byarm, because I post there every day. And you guys can keep up with me on Instagram. I know I've talked about this before, but there are new subscribers and there are people who just click on this video. They don't even know me. They just want to know how YouTubers make money. So here's how YouTubers make money. Google runs ads. So you probably saw an ad before this video, and I'll put an ad right here.
Ads. Boom.
Make you money on YouTube. Google is the one who runs the ads. They put ads on your video, and so every time somebody clicks on your video, that bird is going crazy based from the ad revenue of this video. Now, every YouTuber's ad revenue is different. The percentages are different. It all depends on which country you live in. I know Americans make the highest ad revenue because Google is American. I'm American, so I make American ad. I have American ads on my channel. I'm an American channel. I'm an American girl. So I have American ads running on my channel. 80% of my subscribers are from America. We can see our analytics. We can see exactly who's watching. So it is very beneficial to be an American YouTuber, although there are YouTubers in other countries who do great as well. But I'm just trying to paint the picture that every ad revenue is different for different countries. And even within different channels within the same country, everybody gets paid a different percentage of the ad revenue. So that's how you make money. Also, you make money from every video collectively on the channel. So even if you go back right now and you watch an old video from a year ago that I posted, I still get paid from any views on my channel at all. So all the old videos, it pays to have a lot of videos on your channel. It pays to be consistent. Consistency is the key. Oh my gosh, with these sirens. YouTube channel, you have to reach, I believe, 10,000 views before they first start putting ads in your videos. So yeah, when you first make a YouTube channel, you're not making money. You have to reach 10,000 views first, and then you can apply for the Google AdSense program, and then if you are approved, you get ads, you get your videos monetized. That's how YouTube works. Okay, so that's one way YouTubers make money, is the ad revenue of a video. The other way is affiliate links. For example, if I recommend you a product, I love these rings, I love this hair oil, I love this face lotion, and I put a link in the description box, anybody clicks on that link, I get paid revenue if it's an affiliate link. They're not always affiliate links. If it's an affiliate link, I get paid for just the link being clicked on, and I get paid if that person makes a purchase under my affiliate link. That is another way YouTubers get paid, affiliate links. Links in the description box that you might click on and you might purchase from. Okay, another way YouTubers get paid, and sometimes this is the most, like the highest grossing way YouTubers make money, is sponsorships. So a brand will email you, or let's talk in context with me. So say a brand emails me and says, I see that your, you know, viewers really seem to like the stuff you recommend. Would you mind trying my product? And then if you like it, you can advertise it to your fans or to your viewers, to your subscribers, and I'll pay you this much to do it. It's the same thing as a commercial on the TV, while you're watching TV, it's the same thing. So a brand will ask you, how much will you charge to talk about my product? You give them a rate. Rates are usually based off views. They're not usually based off subscriber count. Views are more important than subscribers. And then that's a huge way you make money on YouTube. Sponsorships. So a company will ask you, you know, like I just explained. And obviously the rates get higher the more subscribers you have or the more views you have. So you can be paid as little as $100 to do a sponsorship, and you can be paid as much as $60,000 to do sponsorships. I know a couple YouTubers that have a million plus subscribers, and they get paid sometimes $60,000 to mention a product, which is crazy. So anywhere between $100,000 and $60,000, you can get paid for a sponsorship depending on your views and depending on your audience. That also does matter. Brands, a lot of times before they ask to work with you, they'll ask you to screenshot your analytics. They want to see how many men versus women watch you. It is way more beneficial to have mostly women viewers, because women rebuy things a lot more than men. So it pays to have a high percentage of women watching you. It also pays to have subscribers around the age of 18 to 24. If that is your maximum, like if that's the majority of your viewers, you'll get paid more, because 18 to 24-year-olds buy the most. So they want to see your analytics. They want to see your percentage. And we can see all that in our creator studio on YouTube. We can screenshot and send it to the brand. Okay, this is the age group that's following me. This is the gender that's following me. This is the country. The most, you know, people in this country follow me. So based off of those things, you'll get paid different rates. That's another way YouTubers make money. Also, Instagram kind of ties in. When you have YouTube, you usually are on Instagram, and same thing with sponsorships on Instagram. A brand will ask you to talk about a product in your stories or talk about a product in a post. Same thing. Okay, so the golden question, everybody wants to know how much money I make. So like I explained, there are different avenues, either ad revenue on a video, sponsorships you're doing, or affiliate links. With all that combined, I make anywhere between $15,000 to $30,000 a month. I'm not going to give you an exact number because, honestly, it's different every month. Some months I have lots of sponsorships. Some months I don't have as many sponsorships. Some months I'm getting a lot of views. Some months I'm not getting that many views. It all depends. Some months You know, I talk about a revolutionary product and that helped me. And, you know, a lot of people go and get that product based off my recommendation. All these different things tie into how much money I make a month. So it's never the same number, but it hovers around the same number. And it's anywhere between $15,000 a month to $30,000 a month is how much money I currently make with all of my efforts combined. Also, all YouTubers are different. Just there could be a YouTuber that has 100,000 subscribers, and there could be a YouTuber that has 10,000 subscribers, and they could be making the same amount of money. Honestly, subscribers don't really count. It's about views. It's about total views on your channel. You can go to a YouTuber and click like the about and see how many collective views they have on their channel. That's like a more accurate viewing of like their impact or their, you know, how much money they might be making. Yeah, so every YouTuber is different. Every YouTuber gets paid different AdSense as well. You get, all YouTubers get a different percentage of ad revenue. It's never the same. And I think that's all. This video was very straightforward. and yeah, as you grow on YouTube, your money grows usually. So I think it's a great job to have. I love it. I love being a travel vlogger, but I also love the fact that I talk about hair because, you know, I've gone through a lot with my hair and got it to where it is now, healthy and long, and my hair tips, because that's honestly how I got my hair together, was Natural Niecy. She helped me so much. I watched her for years. She helped me get my hair together and skin and everything like that. So I do a lot of those videos, but I love being a travel vlogger. I love being a YouTuber. It's a great creative outlet. And I'm a workaholic, and YouTube is great for workaholics because you can just work as much as you want. And I need that. And I love being my own boss. I love creating my own schedules. I love doing what I love and getting paid for it. That was my intention starting YouTube. I was like, I am, you know, maybe if this takes off, that's great, but I'm never going to do videos that I think are going to make me money. I'm going to do videos that I would want to watch, videos that I am passionate about. And if it picks up and makes money, it picks up and makes money. So I think that's very important as well. Don't create a YouTube channel because you want money. Create a YouTube channel because you love the creativity of it. You love the creative outlet. You love what you're posting. And if people kind of gravitate towards that, then that's amazing. There are a lot of YouTube channels right now, a lot. So it is very competitive space right now. But I love that about YouTube, and I think it's an amazing thing to do. It doesn't discriminate. You don't have to be a certain race. You don't have to be a certain age. You don't have to be a certain body type. You don't have to be anything on YouTube. You can be whoever you want to be, and you can still make it a job and have it work for you. So that's everything I want to talk about in this video. If you guys have any other questions for me, leave them down below. I tend to be quite honest with you guys because it's the truth, and I honestly would want to know. I would want to know how much YouTubers make if I was not a YouTuber, and I would want to know how it works. Yeah, any other questions, leave them down below, and I'll see you guys in my next video. Bye!
So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to pimp my ride.
So you want to be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You got to hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to
pimp my ride. So you wanna be a player, but your wheels ain't fly. You gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to pimp my ride.
So you wanna be a player, but
your wheels ain't fly, you gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to pimp my ride.
So you wanna be a player, but your wheels ain't fly, you gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to
so you wanna be a player, but your wheels ain't fly, you gotta hit us up to get a pimped out ride.
You got to pimp my ride.
Damn right.
You got to pimp my ride.
Okay, I kicked myself out of the show, so I had to call back in. All right, let's see. All right, now, like I said, the distinction between a mobile home community and a trailer park. For years I had, and many of us have, interchangeably said, you know, when you say trailer park or mobile home community, you thought they were the same thing, but they're not. A mobile home community is a place where recreational mobile homes, homes that had, it could be a RV, recreational vehicle that has a motor in it and you drive around, it's mobile. Okay. Or maybe you can, you know, drag it along. Some people might call a tiny house on wheels, you know, a mobile home, but the mobile home community is where the homes are mobile and considered personal property and not real estate. A trailer park also is not real estate. Trailers are personal properties, but they're not mobile. They're not mobile. Okay. They can be hauled off by a company, I mean, you know, by, you know, a tow truck or whatever. But trailer parks, the properties within them, which are known as trailers, or campers, depends on who you talk to, they're not mobile. But they can be moved, but a mobile home is basically for vehicles that are mobile. Okay. Now, that's all for me for today. Yesterday, the last 2 days, we wanted to cover one pie. And one pie, that's the label I put on Marie Callender's story. Marie Callender, if you go into the frozen food section, she's got apple pies, baked goods. I like her chicken pot pies. They're my favorite chicken pot pies, at least the frozen type. Store-bought, that is. But, she, you know, she's got a variety of meals, frozen food meals. And but anyway, it started with Marie Callender. Marie Callender, who was living in a, I guess, a trailer park. Her and her husband and her family had a son. They were living in a trailer park, and I don't know whether she was working at a diner or she took one of her pies to the diner. Let's go with she was working at a diner. She was working at a diner, and she bought one of her pies in, and it sold. You know, it slices up and sell by slice. So the owner of the diner asked her to bring in another pie. She bought in four. Those pies sold quickly. And then her husband and her, they had a car. They sold the family car for $700 and bought, now I guess this is when $700 was really worth $700. They bought a commercial oven for her home. I guess it was in the trailer that she and her husband and son were living in. And she started to, I guess, put out 20 pies per day. And then as things scaled up, was doing 200 pies per day. All right. Later on, they opened up, you know, a shop that sold pie or, you know, various pies and, you know, pastries that she might have made, plus coffee. Then that morphed into restaurants. And then, you know, a manufacturing concern picked up on it, but it was cranking out 200,000 pies per day. But it all started with this lady, Marie Callender, with her husband helping her. And her son, in the early days, she would make pies and give them to her son, and he would deliver a lot of those pies by his bike. All right, so very interesting story about Marie Callender. So when you go into the store and you, I like her apple pies. Well, Mrs. Smith makes probably the best frozen apple pie. But Marie Callender, I like her chicken pot pies. That's my favorite thing about her. So that's that on that. All right, let's see. That's it on mine, unless you guys got something else that you want to chop it up on. This is October, and I got a challenging month this month, but I'll get through it. So if there's anything trending you guys want to talk about, just let me know. The hurricane where I'm at, I think I talked about this last week, the electricity never went off where I'm at. And now some tree branches fell on the carport and demolished that. But the house and the roof basically are okay. So it blew off maybe some of the shingles, but those can be easily replaced. So I had to get up on the roof and take care of that. But that's it as far as, Fort Myers, Florida, where it first made landfall, it hit that pretty hard. So some people got totally wiped out. So I guess I'm extremely fortunate in that department. Okay, so I'm Laurie. Here we go. All right, well, if you guys don't have anything that you want to bring up, trending topics, whatever you got going, we're going to, if I can find it, wrap it up for today. So everyone have a good rest of the day.